Suppose, let us say, you have the family out for a carefree ride on a Sunday. And as you're about to enter the big city, you read one of those Chamber of Commerce signs that says,
"Welcome to our city."
Nothing strange about that.
Oh, but keep reading.
"Welcome to our city. Caution, our air is poisoned. Please don't breathe."
Fantastic? Impossible? No. In city after city throughout our nation, it's the stark truth. Our air is polluted. It is sickening people every day. It sickens and sometimes kills them. It's costing us dearly in happiness, health, money, lives. Living, 1949, brought to you each week at this time by NBC and its affiliated stations, holds up its radio mirror to reflect the tragic and uncalled-for price we are paying each day for civilization, American style. In a drama document entitled,
"It Floats Through the Air."
Here to begin our report, your narrator, Ben Grauer. Greetings, America. 19 years ago last December, in the Meuse Valley of Belgium, in the farming area surrounding the factories of Liège, the good people went to sleep one day enshrouded by a fog. And the next day, and the next. And on the fourth day, they woke up coughing, smarting, and choking.
What can it be, Henri?
I don't know. My chest.
The animals. What of the animals?
Oh, come, Henri.
Out in the barnyard stagger the farmer and his wife to find, lying on the ground, agonizingly clawing at the air, gasping for one clear breath, the cattle, hogs, chickens.
Henri, the cattle, they're dying.
Quickly into the house. Close the doors, the windows. Fill in the cracks.
Henri!
In spite of everything, 63 died. Not of poison gas, not of the Black Death, but of something erupted by the modern chimneys of their own coal-burning mills in Liège. Many scientists said it was sulfur dioxide, erupted as smoke, caught and held by the fog ceiling over the valley, converted by sunlight into sulfur trioxide, which in its own good time absorbs enough water from the air to become vicious sulfuric acid, lung-burning sulfuric acid, killing sulfuric acid, drizzling to earth in minute drops of misty water we call fog. No, it wasn't raining violets in the Meuse Valley in December 1930. It was raining factory-made, man-made death. Well, I can hear you now. You're saying...
So what? That was Belgium, way back in 1930. It can't happen here.
It can happen here, eh? Brother, it can happen here. Brother, it did happen here. Brother, it is happening here now. Listen.
It did happen here just 8 months ago in a town of 13,000 nestling on the side of a hill amid railway yards, under the smokestacks of steel mills and a zinc smelter. A town at whose entrance is a proud sign reading,
"Next to yours, the best town in the USA. The town of Donora, Pennsylvania."
Let us say it is October 30th, 1948, and you live in Donora. Past few days have been windy, but suddenly there is scarcely a breeze. And so, with nothing to chase it away, a fog envelops your nestling city. Into the sky, your chimneys continue to belch their soot and poison. Sun? How are you going to see the sun when between you and it floats an ugly, misty blackness that turns day into night? You call it...
smog.
A word for Henry L. Mencken and his study of the American language. A word born of two words, smoke and fog. Your wife complains...
Oh, it's all over everything. Whatever you touch is grimy. Just look at these curtains Mother gave us, and I only washed them yesterday.
But what the heck, you're a man of the world.
So what? We can't help it. Just something you gotta put up with. Maybe the wind will blow it away.
The wind? Don't make me laugh. What wind? There is no wind. For 3 days and two nights there's been no wind. Now you begin to... just like in the Meuse Valley of Belgium, remember? And on the third night, on the third heavy, black, poisonous night, suddenly you wake up, head for the window, gasping...
I can't breathe.
John, what's the matter?
My, My heart.
You've had a cardiac condition. Your wife grabbed for a bottle.
Oh, here, dear. Take one of your pills.
Give me...
John! John, speak to me!
You'll never speak again. You're dead.
Other choking citizens suffering from heart or asthmatic conditions can't take fog served up with poison. Scores rush from their homes, appear in the blurred streets, pleading...
Me next, doctor. Please.
As a quick-thinking doctor runs from one to another, injecting adrenaline as fast as he can. Soon, hospitals are jammed to the corridor, unable to take another patient. Firemen are roaming the streets with oxygen tanks to bring relief. Hundreds escaping anywhere, everywhere. When the rain finally washes the danger away, the toll is 400 stricken, 20 dead, 18 the very first day. And a doctor on the Board of Health is quoted as saying,
it's plain murder.
What caused this unpremeditated massacre in a typical industrial community of the USA? Could it have been sulfuric acid, which can eat its way through a piece of steel, let alone a human lung? Or deadly fluorine gas? Whatever it was, the governor of Pennsylvania has called for an investigation to find out and to prevent it from happening again. The U.S. Public Health Service and other agencies are hard at work on the problem now, but it's too late for the unfortunate 400, some of whom lay under oxygen tents in hospitals. It's certainly too late for the 20 who died. Certainly, you're sorry. It's a terrible thing, and they all have our sympathy out there in Denora. But going on in the back of your mind just the same?
That happened in Denora. I don't live in Denora.
Listen, brother, get next to yourself. If you live in an average American city, you're living in a fool's paradise. According to Fortune magazine, the 100 cubic feet of air you breathe every day is likely to contain...
5 milligrams of unignited carbon and ash, salted with some 8 billion particles of tire rubber, asphalt, stone, glass, and other debris. In addition to soot and sulfur dioxide, each lungful of air most city dwellers breathe also contains ammonia, formaldehyde, nitric acid, hydrochloric acid, and chlorine.
Put that, my friend, as the saying goes, into your pipe and smoke it. What a witch's brew, eh? And the cost to you and me and everybody else is terrific. Take industry alone.
We in the Manufacturing Chemists Association, with over 60 top companies to serve, are cognizant of this problem and are spending and working to discover methods of detecting, measuring, and controlling air contaminants throughout the nation. Elsewhere, on their own, industry after industry are spending thousands of dollars to combat the pollution problem.
That's the cost to industry. And what's the tab for you, the public?
First, economic costs.
Do you want to know something? In our town, we discovered that the sulfuric acids cast into the air by the smokestacks of our industries have actually rotted away the mortar between the stones of our county jail and corroded the metal tower in our city hall.
Well, what do you think we ought to do, boss?
Do? What can we do? Run another ad. Sale slightly soiled merchandise.
What do you mean I don't have any more clean shirts?
Just that. I can't keep up with you. They're dirty 5 minutes after you put them on.
Look at those oranges. Stunted again.
Every bush I try to plant around the house, every vegetable, just withers and dies.
Damaged goods, blighted agriculture. And you can further write down, discouragement of new industry, loss of residents, visitors, hospitals, all part of a bill conservatively estimated, get that, conservatively estimated, at $1.5 billion, not million, I said $1 billion. And that doesn't take into account the other, the human cost.
The cost in health.
Consider the sun. The sun, our source of life. The rays of the sun warm and protect us. Now consider this.
Smog is anathema to the sun. It keeps out the ultraviolet rays that kill germs. When smoke hides the sun, as it often does a third of the time in many of our urban areas, the germs have a field day. What's more, smoke gives them, free for nothing, transportation, dust particles to hang on to. Without this man-provided transportation, disease germs would only be able to travel a few feet through the air.
Stay with us, brother. We have a lot more. Take respiratory diseases like influenza and grip.
Respiratory diseases, my friend, including the common cold, account for 50% of all the time this nation loses from its work. Yes, our polluted atmosphere, which one study shows deposits grime in a city home to the tune of 10 pounds a month. Our polluted atmosphere, which we take into our lungs when we're...
just going out for a breath of fresh air.
Our polluted air has been and is still, in many of our cities, a matter of life or death. We invite you, America, to look, if you dare, upon our fair land and see if you're not ashamed.
A famous suburb of a famous city on the Pacific coast.
The wind that has been blowing stops blowing. Into the mass of overhanging dead air, the oil refineries pour their noxious gases. When the wind starts again, it heads these gases toward the ocean. But winds are fickle.
What is it?
It's terrible.
The wind has shifted. The city is filled with a nauseous stench.
What is it? What is it?
Somebody told me it's poison gas.
The rumor spreads. The town is thrown into wild disorder. Mothers strive frantically to seal their windows.
Get me the adhesive tape.
Others pick up their babies and rush into the street.
My baby! My baby! What shall I do about my baby?
A town is turned upside down, inside out, frightened out of its wits. Not by war, but by the fumes from its own chimneys.
In a noted steel center in the east,
a young physician is performing an autopsy upon an out-of-town visitor who has just died in the city. Reports Bill Davidson in Collier's, the doctor takes one look and sees, instead of the black soot-coated lungs he's accustomed to, pink lungs, and yells for the medical director.
What's wrong with these lungs?
Nothing. You've just never seen normal lungs before.
Think of it. In one of our great eastern cities, the sight of clean lungs is strange enough to confound a trained physician.
A north central city.
It is midday, but a strange midday. There is no light. Smoke rising from the burning waste piles has joined the fog to conspire against traffic, to tie the streets of modern man into a hazy, dangerous knot. In this dark midday smog, two cars meet head on.
And two citizens unexpectedly meet death in the afternoon.
In a southeastern city,
the wind has shifted. Over a residential area along the Mississippi, noses are now filled with a stomach-turning stench born of oil or gas that sets people to vomiting and then stretches them out in bed, groaning.
Oh, my head. My splitting head.
A metropolis of the Midwest.
A reporter describes a typical day.
Visibility was zero at 10 a.m., and autos groped along with bright headlights on. Even so, many of them ended up on sidewalks and on the wrong side of the street. The street lights were turned on at 9 a.m., but they did no good. Trains were delayed in the yards 30 to 40 minutes. The Mississippi bridges were clogged with stalled traffic. And outside the city, farmers' fields were crowded with cars that couldn't go any further. Physicians were deluged with patients whose sinuses were irritated, whose mouths were made raw by the acrid smoke.
This is America in the midst of living 1949. USA, our poison paradise. What's behind all this? What are the causes? Why is it that today a man can scarcely draw a decent breath in too many of the cities of our nation? How come unsuspecting people are being sickened to death in our streets?
It's all very simple, really. You can sum it up with one word, civilization. The growth of industry, burning soft coal, oil, and what have you, not maliciously, but to provide us with the things of life we ourselves demand. Then the movement of the population from the farms to the cities. The crowding of our communities with homes stretching out to surround our industrial plants. Plants that protest rightfully, they were there first. Add the soot and grime that comes out of your own chimneys, out of apartment buildings. Add automobiles pouring fumes from their exhausts. Add the dirt of our city streets. It's a blight for which we, the public, equally share the blame.
Now ask yourself,
is there any way we can fight this?
And listen to the answer.
You bet. There is a way, a scientific way, to fight every type of air pollution that's causing all of this trouble. Some ways are mighty expensive, but don't let anybody kid you. There is a way.
Examples, please.
The dust in the coal we mine results in fly ash, which can be reduced to harmlessness by washing processes at the mines. Modern firing equipment can eliminate dangerous industrial smoke. We can use electricity to capture fly ash before it takes off to do its evil.
Thanks, sir. And now let's see if any community went to work to do something about it.
I give you St. Louis in 1940, when one day out of every six was...
Smoke Day.
On one of those days, the chief editorial writer of one of the St. Louis newspapers was creeping through the mist in his car, accompanied by a friend.
Look out, Bill!
Oh, I almost hit him, almost killed that kid. Didn't even know he was there.
Unnerved and sore, the editor bangs into his office.
Hey, what's the matter? You look like you're on a tear.
You bet I'm on a tear. I almost killed a kid today because of that darn smoke. And I'm going to tear this town apart to find out why we don't do something about it.
Into his typewriter goes a clean, well, comparatively clean sheet of paper. Down goes fingers on the keys. And out come the burning words,
smoke. Smoke from a thousand chimneys. That's the curse of this city. What we need is less talk and more action.
It was like a spark setting a great forest fire. In no time at all, the mayor appoints...
In response to public demand, I've appointed a citizens' committee to clean up this town.
The citizens' committee, with an ex-engineering professor for its smoke engineer, goes promptly to work. In a short while announces...
Most of our trouble is due to the fact that we're burning smoky, soft coal that never fully burns. So sends up billions of carbon and tar particles.
Just as quickly, it announces a solution.
One, either burn some low volatile fuel, such as oil, gas, or hard coal. Or two, use scientific devices to ensure complete smokeless burning of the soft coal.
In vain, the coal operators protest.
We'll be ruined.
The mayor goes ahead.
Rush through a smoke ordinance at once.
17 times that smoke ordinance is hauled into the courts, its constitutionality tested. 17 times it emerges with a clean bill of health. So industry installs carbon and tar curbing equipment. Results?
Well, darling, it looks like another sunny day.
The following winter, St. Louis saw the sun steadily for the first time in almost 100 years.
In the aftermath of the St. Louis story...
We doctors here in St. Louis observed afterward an amazing drop of 40% in respiratory ailments.
And the coal operators?
A funny thing. The year after the new smoke ordinance went into effect, we sold 9% more coal than we had the year before.
Nor are the byproduct benefits of pollution reform to be ignored.
One day, an air pollution control commissioner said to the president of Los Angeles Smelting and Refining Company,
don't you know what you're pouring off into the air?
Well, certainly, lead oxide.
And don't you know that lead oxide is worth 10 cents a pound of thereabouts on the current market?
Well, of course I know, but what am I going to do about it?
Here, let me tell you how you can collect that lead oxide.
The company, following the commissioner's advice, builds a huge tent-like device through which its fumes can pass. The lead oxide to be collected on fiberglass. Cost, $40,000. And shortly after the device was put in operation, reports...
We are recovering 15 barrels of lead oxide a day. We get $20 a barrel for it. That comes to $1,800 a week. At this rate, we'll soon be making a profit out of what was once nothing but a nuisance to the city and ourselves.
Which brings us to your community. To wondering what people like you can do about the fouling of the air you and your children breathe, the almost imperceptible poison we take into our lungs day after day, year after year. This time I can hear you saying...
What can we do? Nothing. You know how it is. People get all head up, start a campaign. An industry or two threatens to leave town, so the campaign blows up. A lot of time wasted.
Well, we should like to put you in the hands of Clive Howard, who wrote for the Woman's Home Companion the article...
Smoke, the Silent Murderer.
Mr. Howard, who chooses Hudson County, New Jersey, as an example of what people, no different from you or me, can do. Listen to what he writes.
Hudson County, New Jersey, was at one time one of the smokiest areas in the world. Polluted by stacks of 300 industrial plants, 1,000 railway locomotives, 100,000 home and office buildings, and nearly 1 million boats operating on its rivers. When it first tried to do something about its smoke, a chorus of alarms went up.
What do you want to do, bankrupt the county?
It'll drive industry away.
Mark my word, grass will grow over the railroad tracks.
But nevertheless, the aroused citizenry demanded action. They managed to get a law and have it fairly well enforced for a time. Then public opinion subsided. After a brief period when Hudson County was cleaner and healthier than ever before, the smoke pall began descending again. Everything was back to normal, and Hudson County was as dirty as ever. Fortunately, the people rose up in wrath once more.
Spend more money.
Hire a smoke expert.
And they did. They got a man who enforced the law with firmness and tact.
He persuaded the railroads and the boat companies to form their own smoke abatement committees, conduct educational campaigns. He did the same thing with industry. Inspired, an industrial committee began policing its own smokestacks, meeting every 2 months to report its progress to list offenders. At first, every meeting produced a list of about
50 companies violating the law.
In 3 years, the number had gone down to about
20 violating the law.
And today?
Today, there are sometimes no offenders at all to report. If a company's name does appear on the list, I can assure you its management is profoundly embarrassed.
And so today, 9/10 of the smoke which hung over Hudson County has been eliminated. And not one of the predictions of the doubters has come true. Not a single industrial plant has been forced out of business or moved away. In fact, some of them who installed smoke-abating equipment are saving money, and so improved their conditions that the groundskeeper of Stevens Institute, one of Hudson County's colleges, reported in amazement.
You know, for the first time in years of trying on this campus, I have finally successfully grown evergreen trees.
And as the advertisement put it, you too can do it, America. And heaven knows there's still a lot to be done. For in spite of everything, we've merely scratched the surface of this problem. You are only as safe as the air you breathe. And if you're breathing
carbon ash, particles of tire rubber, asphalt, stone, glass, soot, sulfur dioxide, ammonia, formaldehyde, nitric acid, hydrochloric acid, and chlorine,
you have, in the last analysis, no one to blame but yourself. You, your neighbor, your neighbor's neighbor, and so on. For together you can mass for action. Action to purify our polluted air and make of our atmosphere something fit to enter your lungs. And in so doing, save billions of dollars, ensure your health and greater happiness, and save lives. And if for one moment you doubt that it needs doing where you live, then try this. Raise your window and just run your finger along your windowsill. Friends, the drama document you've just heard was only part one of a two-part story. Next week, we'll bring you a program paced to Memorial Day weekend, but 2 weeks from today, we'll present part two of this story begun today. The story of the sordid abuse of the great God-given bounty of our rivers and streams, entitled
Our Troubled Waters.
If you love nature, if you like wildlife, if you enjoy fishing or swimming, if you value your health, be sure to be with us for
Our Troubled Waters.
Living 1949 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by a special program staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Lou Haslam writes the scripts. Your narrator is Ben Grauer. The music is composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shield. This program is directed by Jack Cuny. To the American Chemical Society, the United States Public Health Service, and other agencies who are fighting the menace of our polluted air and have helped us to bring it to your attention, our thanks. Be with us next week on Living 1949 for
Death Takes No Holiday.
This program came to you from our studios in Radio City, New York. Warren speaking. National Broadcasting Company.